Welcome to Tribecast. I'm Forrest Walden, founder and CEO of Iron Tribe Fitness. And on this podcast, I am going to help you find your tribe and maximize your life. Welcome to another episode of Tribecast. Excited this morning to sit down with my friend, Jonathan LeDuc. Jonathan is the executive director of JH Ranch. And I told him he had to come on the show because JH has come up, I mean, no less than probably 8 or 9 guests. When I've gotten into the balanced domain, when I've asked busy entrepreneurs what they're doing specifically inside the context of developing one-on-one relationships with their children, JH Ranch just keeps coming up. It's been a huge part of my life. I'm excited next summer. Both my daughters are going, and I'm taking my wife all at the same time. We're doing the marriage retreat at Scott River Lodge. So continues to be a huge part of my family's life. I've been blessed by it. And so, Jonathan, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Forrest. It's a joy to be with you today.
This week, I had someone ask me, you know, there's all kind of ranches. There's all kind of things people can go, like, what makes JH Ranch so special? And I said, you know, that's a good question. I think a lot of things. I mean, a lot of prayer, the intentionality behind the kids you have serving out there. I mean, just so many things. But what I'd like you to do, since most of our listeners won't know you, is just talk about who Jonathan is and your background, how you got to JH, what you're doing now. And then we can start unpacking what makes JH so special.
Yeah, wonderful. Thank you. Well, I grew up in Northern California, and I always had a passion for the outdoors. I love adventure. And just as my journey with the Lord continued to grow, I was exposed in college to the JH Ranch by a college roommate. And after volunteering there, there was such a transformation in my life in that first year that I talked with my girlfriend, who is now my wife, shared with her some of the content that I had heard and these messages that really just impacted me in a significant way. And I volunteered a couple summers, and that led to moving back here to Birmingham, Alabama, which our 2-year experiment has now become 17. And we're building a life back here. And one of the unique things about the ranch is that the offices are located here in Birmingham, and that's really where a large draw comes out of the southeast. But the actual facilities out in Northern California. Mm-hmm. And so family's still out in California, but, you know, when there's a call in your life and a real passion for doing something, it's easier to stick with it. And as our family has grown, we now have 4 kids that are all Southern born. The joy that we have of having them be part of the community and spending time in the summers at JH Ranch, where it's just such a place of intentionality. You know, people are there wanting to develop the most meaningful relationships in their life. And so them getting opportunity to see that as normal, no parent, I think, would look at that and say, gosh, this isn't worth all of the sacrifice associated with it. So I made my way up through, I was the men's dean, hiring the guys for a decade. I was a program director, and past 6 years have been the executive director, as our founder has really sought to look far beyond the property of the ranch to expand the ministry effort. So my job is really holding down the fort here and continuing to move this endeavor along. And it's really, you know, I get up on stage and I just say, I have the best job in the world. And I don't know how many people discover what they want to do straight out of college and are still doing it 20 years on. Not without its challenges, but I tell you, the way I've grown personally and get to see that growth all around me and now in my family and the kids that are now teenagers, it makes it worth it in every way.
So worth it.
Yeah.
So help us understand what your team looks like now. Who are you leading as executive director? Kind of what is your domain there at the ranch? What are you in charge of?
Sure. We have about 48 staff. With the properties out in California, we've got people that stay year-round out there, probably 20 staff here in Birmingham, and then several associated ministries. So my job is really on the day-to-day running the business operations of JH. And, you know, one of the coolest things that we see God doing is this expansive growth. You know, not everybody can come out to California. And so we've got these local expressions called Outback, where we can take our week, compress it into a weekend event. And that's really born out of these men's and women's small groups. You know, events are great, but gosh, they can be flashes in the pan compared to the enduring relationship and the change that comes about through accountability in your life. And so these men's groups and women's groups lead towards an event, and that just makes it far more accessible as we have events in, I think, 8 or 9 U.S. cities and now 10 countries around the world doing these Outback events.
Okay, so then Outback would take kind of a mini JH Ranch experience. Yes. You're not in California, you're not on the facilities, but they're really taking the core curriculum and what's so impactful and packaging it in a way which is more accessible to more people.
Absolutely.
Okay.
The ranch in many ways is kind of like the crock pot where you have a week to spend just one-on-one with that child or your parent. And, you know, how unique. I heard it said that this dad was calculating how much the volume of time he gets one-on-one, and he said it's probably 3 weeks throughout their whole high school experience that I have just with that child. So to have one more week in that, I mean, that's invaluable. So because of that, it's not all that accessible. I mean, you've got to travel across the country. And because of it, we thought, gosh, there's got to be a way to grow this. And, you know, property and the day-to-day operations of a facility, that's very expensive. Mm-hmm. And so how do we get the content out there in such a way that it's far more readily accessible, not just nationally, but internationally?
Okay. With your responsibility at the ranch, how many are of the 48 are there? Are those all at the ranch full time?
Yeah, almost everybody will be there in the summers.
Okay. And so then you've got another couple hundred college volunteers. What do you call them?
Right. They're called crew.
Okay.
And they are mostly volunteers. They'll come out in the summer. And in many ways, they're what we call a culture amplifiers. So as they pick up what our culture is at JH Ranch and how it is that we want to create an environment where people can come in and start with this, the idea, you know, of transforming communities one family at a time. That's our vision. Gene Johnston, who is our founder's father, he had this desire to create a place where world-weary people could get away and be refreshed. And it takes a setting apart, a going away. And in so doing, you know, we've got probably 250 guests coming each week. And with our 50 staff, this critical link is our crew, where they've caught what we're trying to do. Things are more caught than taught. Mm-hmm. And then they're living it out. So there's a motto we have. I think Socrates came up with it. I heard and I forgot. I saw and I remembered. I did and I understood. And in our culture, we're so information rich but experience poor that we wanted to really create a place where practical application is the key. So our mission statement is to teach and model the great commandment, loving God and loving others, through the challenges of practical application. So they get to hear it, hear the message, then they get to see it lived out in the lives of the crew, and then they get opportunity through this fun, experiential, and adventure education to put these principles into practice. So people really go home with learned principles more than just inspiration. Mm. And when I think about what are some of the differences between us and, say, other places, we're really trying to create an environment where people get to see it lived out. And in so doing, go, gosh, it is possible. It's possible. And, you know, whether it's the full-time staff, you know, which sometimes you know, they're the paid people. Mm-hmm. But when you have a volunteer college kid and they're really setting an example for your son or daughter coming out, and you say, well, I want them. I want my kids to be around them. And as a parent, that's what I get every summer when I get to see these models walking around and my kids just taking after them.
Well, I can tell you, as someone who's spent 2 weeks out there, one of the most impactful takeaways for me was the culture of the college volunteers. And just, they're sold out for the mission of J.H. Ranch. They're sold out for Jesus. They are so intentional and pouring into, I've taken two daughters now, and them now being able to go back and do your other programs, which I want to talk about. But yeah, I think that's one of the big differentiators. And that's what I told my friend when he asked me, you know, what makes it special. It's like, I just impacted it and really walked away thinking, one of my new goals is for my kids to end up working out there, because what I saw that I didn't really expect was a leadership pipeline that's really impressive. Of, I think you get like 400 applications
easily.
Of people who want to give up their summers and come serve, and so you're able to pick the cream of the crop, and there's just some really impressive young men and women out there that are walking with the Lord. So that's really huge. All right, so let's talk about, for those who aren't familiar with the ranch, just like, what are the programs? What does it look like? Just kind of, if someone were to ask you who wasn't familiar,
right,
like, tell us about the ranch.
So the one we've been speaking about is the Parents and Daughter Program, where that's 1 week long. One parent, one child will come on out. We also have student leadership programs for junior high, high school kids. It's called Second Wind, and that's a 2 week program where in the first week they hear much of the same content packaged differently that's more age appropriate, but then they'll go on high adventure activities. So a 3 day backpacking trip, they'll climb Shasta, they'll go whitewater rafting, and really that's about them getting thrust into leadership applications. Experiences where they've got to start applying the things that they just heard. And so with those Second Wind programs, Challenge is the junior high program, Track 2 is for the returners. We also have Scott River Lodge, which is a husband-wife facility nearby the ranch, on the way to the river, actually. And that's really about restoring the marriages. And, you know, as it goes with the parents, it will go with the kids. So when people talk about, well, what program should I go to? I always say, start with the parent-teen program, because you're impacting a parent in the same way. So as, you know, kids in many ways can be roller coasters, just with their enthusiasm. You know, they're high highs and low lows, up and down. But it's the parents who've been around the block a few times that know, gosh, these are really great principles. If we just make this a foundation for our life, one of those would be a 6 week commitment to spend time with the Lord, then that 6 weeks develops a habit, and that habit turns into a lifestyle. And so a parent can help keep a kid accountable when they've in turn gone through the experience. And I'll tell you, so many parents come out to quote unquote fix their kids, and in turn God has something for them. And they're so impacted. And you know, as it goes with the parent, again, it will go with the kid.
Well, there are very few things that I know of where my advice that I give other dads is the same advice I was given, and it's simply this: you've got to do it. It's non-negotiable.
Just got to go.
And I have told, I can't tell you how many of my friends I have told that exact message, and they've come back and said 100% worth it, and now they're repeating that same message, because right, it is just super impactful. And I could go into why, but you just got to experience it, and I don't want to ruin any of it for those of you who aren't going. I do want to point out, though, you talked about where do I start. I feel like there is a good age for the father-son, father-daughter. I have found that somewhere between 8th and 9th grade has been perfect for us. Do you have a general recommendation on that?
Yeah, right around 14.
Yeah.
You know, I think girls are always a little bit more mature than boys. And so I tend to say around that age, 14, 13 for girls, we will take anywhere in the adolescent spectrum. And what we're finding, interestingly, is some parents will come back just as they launch, as the kid is about to launch into college. It's just that one last little time together. But you know, you want them mature enough that they're really able to hear and understand some of the principles we're talking about, particularly as it regards to dating and how not to just be looking for the right person, but how to become the right person. And, you know, it's these horizontal relationships, particularly in adolescence, that so affect the outlook of these kids' lives. And so when you're talking about the power and influence of your community around you, and these kids are able to start assimilating through some good and bad experiences that they've had in junior high and high school, then they're able to really take that in and say, okay, how do I want to live differently? And so we found that 14 is a pretty great age. Some will come at 13, you know, multiple siblings. Those younger ones grow up a whole lot quicker. They get exposed to more, and that's when, you know, 13 is more appropriate. But if you've got an older age, I tend to say 14 is great.
Yeah, and to your point, I just had a really good friend. In fact, he's been on the show, Cord Sachs. He took his oldest of six, Jeremiah, out, and Jeremiah is about to graduate and go off to Auburn. And he's like, man, I hadn't done it with him. Like, this is my last chance. And they had a phenomenal experience.
Right,
and
right.
For him, it was, you know, one dedicated week before his first of six leaves the nest. So super impactful. All right. So you've got a ton going on. You do have one of the coolest jobs in the world, but I know it doesn't come without great responsibility. I look at the events you guys do, ton of risk. Uh-huh. You've got college kids, you know, putting people up on 40-foot ropes.
Literally, and holding lives in their hands.
Holding lives in their hand with belay ropes. And so you've got all kind of things going on, and that requires leadership. That requires vision. And so what I want to talk about, as you know, is across body, being, and balance. What are you doing to really equip yourself to show up every summer when you're back here, when you're fundraising, when you're casting vision, to show up on fire and leading with every talent that God's given you? So I want to start with body. I know you're a pretty fanatical exercise guy, a little different than the way I do it. But let's talk about what you do in your body domain to make sure that you're showing up on fire as you lead.
Right. So I love endurance sports. Cycling has been a passion of mine since junior high. I grew up racing BMX and mountain biking and all of that. And it helps being from the West, that is a little bit more bike friendly. And actually Bike City USA, Chico, California, where I grew up. And so it was normal. In fact, I didn't own a car until I got married.
Wow.
Just because, well, that's a little atypical. But that has spawned into how I want to recreate myself and just have the energy for the day. And so what that typically looks like for me is I would do century rides, which is 100 miles. Mm-hmm. I would do occasional mountain bike racings. But a couple of years ago, you know, just the routine of it all, I wanted to mix it up a little bit. So decided to do a couple marathons, and then I blended it together. For my 40th, actually, I decided I'm going to do an Ironman. And that was my first ever triathlon. I'm one of the types that I inherently feel confident, like, I'm going to pull this off. But there were some unknowns. Like, that had a real potential for failure.
Mm-hmm.
And so I took a good little while to train. They generally say a year of training for that. And it was a very pivotal experience for me, just because it required disciplines that I had, but I had to make adjustments in my life. And I'm sure we'll talk about this a little bit later, but just when you need a training volume of an hour and a half in the mornings, you know, four kids, I don't have evenings. We're chasing their schedules. So I had to get up that much earlier in the morning. And so I just had to make sacrifices. And one of which is we just don't do TV anymore because, you know, I just need to get to bed, because that's setting the table for the next day. And, you know, that's what discipline really is, I think, is forecasting what you're going to need and back it up and saying, so what are the decisions that I need to make now? So cycling, triathlon, you know, endurance type events are a big passion of mine. And when it's raining, I'll either be out in the rain on a run or I just do some HIIT training, just because I know you can do a whole lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll say, you know, really kind of the bigger question is the physical training and activity is so incredibly important for me, because the connectedness with body, mind, and spirit. And as it goes, well, you know, if I get vacations, holiday, those types of things throw off your rhythm. And I have to fight when I'm on those adventures, you know, whatever they are, to stay in my habit and routine, because I just end up feeling so much better about myself versus that downward spiral of, you know, not feeling very good. So you don't exercise, then you eat poorly, then you don't feel good, and on and on. So to break out of that, I just have recognized physical training for me is of critical importance to feel good, to be at my best game, you know, relationally, mm-hmm. at work, business, whatever.
Well, you bring up a couple good points I want to unpack. The last one, I love working out on vacation. And people look at that and be like, oh my gosh, I can't believe. Like, you're on vacation, relax. But like, no, I feel so much better. Like, it's not worth it to me. It's not a drudgery. It's like a gift, right, that I get to do. And in fact, we've blended the two and realized we are not good just lay around vacationers. And so we've been using this company called Backroads to do active vacations and doing more of your style of training, yes, the hikes and bikes and kayaking and all this stuff. And of course, JH is very similar to that. But the other thing I want to talk about, you casually mentioned it, no TV. Does that mean no cable? Does that mean you took the TV out of your house? Or does that mean you just simply don't turn it on during the week and maybe you watch sports on the weekend?
Fair question.
Yep.
We don't have cable.
Okay.
So we got bunny ears. There will be an occasional game on. But I've also always been the one that I can watch maybe a quarter of football and then I've got to go move, mm-hmm. and do something. And part of that, you know, is the, okay, can you really chill out a little bit and just settle down? But the kids enjoy movies, so we do have a physical TV, and they will watch movies on, mm-hmm. that. But, you know, I also find that, you know, there's, with all the commercials and everything else, it's just pretty much a grand waste of time, because you also can't really, or you don't know what's coming in. And one of the things I talk about with my kids is, you know, when you're tired and you just want to unplug and chill, your walls come down. Mm-hmm. And that's the worst time to just open up a portal that you can't control and in it comes. You know, if I'm very rigorous about what I'm eating, and then the time you really want to chill is when you just are doing whatever, eating,
yep.
whatever,
yep.
you're gonna not feel good. So I remember distinctly a couple times where I wanted to just veg, chill, put on a movie, and I just saw some stuff I didn't want to, and it took a lot of discipline to turn it off, you know, when I had to go rent the movie and change everybody's expectations. But I recognized that it is incredibly important for us to monitor, evaluate what we're taking in, and it's precisely the worst time to when we're just trying to unplug to put that in, because our guard is down.
Well, it's a great point. And in fact, it resonates with me because I set targets every quarter across body, being, balance, and business. And actually in my balance target for Q4, I looked at Q3 and the target was to be more consistent, reading the Bible with my boys, spending quality time with my girls, doing our devotion that we started at JH Ranch, and to be involved in more intimate conversations with Mindy at night is what she needs. Mm-hmm. And I realized all three of those were being impacted by a terrible habit of mine. And that habit is political news. Uh-huh. When I'm done for the day, I will just lay down and I will just watch that mindless garbage about what's going on politically. And so my target this quarter is to eliminate all political news from my life. I have not told Mindy that. So when she listens, uh-huh. to this, she's going to love that target.
You now have accountability.
Yes. She's always like, can we please turn this off? They say the same thing every night. So anyway.
I've noticed that with TV.
Yes.
It tends to be, you know, so we go away for the summer, which really allows us to unplug from culture.
Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing. It's all the same stuff when we come back 3 months later.
Yep.
And so you realize, yes, we need to be informed, but I'll do that through headlines and avoid the TV on.
Cycles.
Didn't grow up with TV on, but that is one of the most significant changes that is countercultural, is to say, what am I really allowing there, and do I really need it or not? And I was faced with it last night. I mean, AT&T was on the doorstep saying, do you want this? You know, we'll bundle it. No. It's it's a countercultural decision.
It is.
But it has major impact.
Love
and
it.
And I just thank you. I'm thankful for the time I get back.
Love it. All right, one final question on body. You mentioned, because I know, I mean, Ironman, that is significant discipline. I actually have a coach of mine training for one right now, and if he's not swimming, he's biking. If he's not biking, he's running. I mean, it's all consuming, and he's not married or with kids, you know. So when you've got all that going on, you mentioned you have to make sacrifices. I'm sure some of that comes in balance with Jen. We'll talk about that. But what time did you have to move your waking up to in order to get that done?
Yeah, 4:20 is now when I wake up. And honestly, as my training volume went from an hour ride to an hour and a half, I just adjusted the time waking up. But I felt so convicted day two of the training. I'm pedaling down the road. And, you know, you're evaluating what your priorities are. And you can look at somebody and said, well, here's your priorities according to how much time you're putting into it. And I felt so convicted by the Lord, because here I am spending an hour and a half on a bike, and I was going to have a 10-minute maybe time with him afterwards. And so I just said, well, Lord, if I'm going to say yes to this, like, this is the most important thing, spending time with you in the morning, I need to get up a whole lot earlier. And 4:20 is ungodly early.
It is.
So will you wake me up? Mm. And the next morning, without an alarm, my brain went on. And I could be present in my sit-down time and then out on the bike at 5 a.m. And so that's just now become a habit. 3 years later, I'm still doing it because I recognize nobody's competing for my time at 4:20 in the morning. It's on after about 6:45. And so I had to make that adjustment, but nobody can consistently get up and do that without the evening sacrifice. And so us trying to get to bed, that's been one of our biggest challenges with junior high and high schoolers, is now they're trying to stay up later, just completing their homework.
Yep.
And I'm trying to make that transition out of bed and how to turn that off. And as a dad, you just want to shut down the house. And that isn't possible. You can't have both of those.
So what's your target to get to bed?
9:30 or 10.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, which you have to if you're getting up at 4:20, or you're just going to crash.
Yeah, it makes for long afternoons.
Yes, it does.
I'm not a coffee drinker.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes coffee gets added in just to make it through if the evening didn't.
I can understand. All right, well, let's talk about balance. Actually, you and I really got to know each other through a marriage class, which was the first quarter of this year, which that was my balance target for that quarter. That was a great experience. Talk about what you and Jen do and your family and your four kids. Obviously, you've got some unique circumstances where you take your family away for 3 to 4 months every year. But talk about some things that you guys have established that have allowed you to create rhythm and solid relationships in your family.
Right. So we all espouse to have the date night a week, or I think we all know we should. We might average one every other week.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's incredibly important. In that marriage class, one of the things that came up was recreational companionship was a high value for both Jen and I. So as she has gotten into tennis, I actually have my first tennis match ever tonight. And it's a way for us to just connect away from the kids. And, you know, the beauty is we're at a life stage where we can leave them home alone and they're going to be okay. That was just unheard of beforehand. And so to have a little bit of time for us together in that way, spend a date night for meaningful conversation is important. One of our biggest goals that we try and achieve that's very difficult is having family dinner. We probably get that 3 to 4 times a week. And, you know, our house is set up where our neighbors who are walking the dogs can see us having family dinner. And I just think about what that's communicating to our neighbors, to our kids, to have that sit-down time. And so we like to ask a couple questions. How are you brave? You know, how did you fail? What was a bright spot, dark spot? The conversational questions that engage more than just, you know, how was your day? Good. You know, the very closed-ended questions that I have found. I'm trying to get at the heart of my kids, and I want to have the meaningful time. And, you know, a lot of times it's volume that is going to accomplish that, but that's what gets pulled at all times, you know, with our culture. The things we sign our kids up for that we're running around in practice. I mean, I just think of us trying to get to church on Sundays and soccer tournaments that get in and us shuffling the schedule constantly, but we've just said, hey, high value, we're going to attend church together. Thankfully, we go to a church that has four services, so we can make that adjustment. That, I think, is a incredibly important thing. And then I also consistently will read and pray with the kids at night. It's not long, but, you know, with your firstborn, we, you know, with four now, your time gets divided. But I just think of the volume of time I had with the first one, taking, reading, and now dividing that out. We've had to say, okay, we're going to have to get creative and try and consolidate these two down. My youngest two kids are twins, so they're in that same age development realm, which allows me to read to the both of them and pray in the evening for them. And with the kids, if I'm dropping them off at school, I'm always trying to speak truth. Just as they're coming into the school and getting dropped off, it's, hey, remember, you're a world changer. You have hope in your heart. We're all looking to find a place and connect people with. So why don't you be the instigator of that and offer that to them? And, you know, they're slow to, the uptake can be slow, but the reality is we're making continual drips into it. And that's what's creating a paradigm change.
I want to get granular on one thing just to make sure we don't glaze over it. Reading and praying with the kids. So does this look like you're putting them to bed at night? You have a book you're reading through? You're reading through the Bible? Like, what does that look like?
Generally, it's a Bible story. We've had over the years that as the Bibles kind of get more voluminous, we'll just read kind of a general Bible story now. Sometimes they select it. But they love to just grab books and read. Thankfully, my kids just enjoy that. And they'll spend the close of their day grabbing a book. But I'll come in and I'm always trying to make sure that we end with a Bible story, because truth, you know, we go to sleep and our brains are still processing things. I mean, so often my dreams are about the things that I was just thinking about. So why don't we put the truth of Christ's words into there, and they can just continue to percolate on that throughout the night. And so I've just said and agreed with Jen, we're going to make this as a habit that they get put to bed, you know, by us, and that we spend a little bit of that time, because it's the close of their day. And I want them to have that security of mom and dad are here, and we're continuing to challenge and change and grow and develop you. But we want to do that more than just on how great we think they are, but rooted in God's word.
Well, I've had the opportunity to be exposed to your kids, and they are awesome kids. And so they just shine. And you guys are doing a fantastic job. You're coming up on 20 years. You guys making plans for a big anniversary trip? Have you thought about that at all?
So we had an opportunity to just have the two of us go on a trip. And we said, you know what, because of our eldest getting close to graduating, we realized time's so short, we wanted to try and take the family. So we're going to go to Italy on a quick little trip over Thanksgiving. As for 20 years, ironically, it's right in the middle of summer. So we have to get creative and do it, you know, in the fall or spring, because, you know, I was Caroline on the bike trip. I've had more anniversaries on the JH bike trip than I have off. And, you know, we smile, and it's one of those, this is a sacrifice that we do, and we do it because of the greater good. But I'm sure we'll go off and do something fun because, you know, as you have to kindle that fire first, you know, it starts with husband and wife. And then from there, the kids are really prospering when the home front is, they feel safe and secure. And there was a principle we learned early on about couch time. And it was, when I come in from the day, am I going to spend significant time first, even if 5 or 10 minutes with Jen talking on the couch is what this, you know, teaching methodology was saying, versus going in and engaging with the kids first. And it's a matter of priority. I want them to recognize that my relationship with Jen, my wife, comes first before them. And in so doing, you know, it's reinforcing the value there. And then I'll spend time with you.
I love it. It's convicting.
Well, you know, it's not always, you know, in fact, if I'm batting 50%, I feel like I'm doing good. But the reality is most of us are in that same spot.
Well, so. Thanks for adding that caveat.
Right.
You will be happy to know we had a lot of discussion about our 20th anniversary, and the leading option was to take a backroads trip, just she and I, to Europe. And do like a biking trip, but we landed on Scott River Lodge.
Okay.
And so that's what our anniversary's in March. So we're going to wait and, you know, go in June and do the marriage retreat at Scott River Lodge. And we just,
more 20 years as well, right?
Yeah, that's right. And so the more we processed it, we thought, you know, we could go have this amazing experience in Europe and it would be phenomenal. But man, when are we really going to have a time to spend an entire week not only doing cool things in an awesome setting in Northern California, but focused on our marriage and getting mentored by people who are wiser and older and more spiritually mature than us. So we're going and we're excited.
Look forward to hosting you again.
All right. So final B, and the most important B, save it for the end, is being. You, like several of my guests, are really in full-time ministry. So it can be easy, I know, to just think that, you know, everything I'm doing is ministry and therefore I don't necessarily have to guard my personal time with the Lord because I'm doing that all day. And that's a dangerous place to be, as we have countless examples of that. How do you guard that personal relationship? I've already heard from 4:20 to 5 o'clock sounds like you're in the Word, so it's the first fruits of your day. Help us unpack that and how that undergirds the other three domains of your life.
Right. Well, to back up just slightly, when we talk about creating a culture at the ranch, you know, there's evident fruit that comes off our lives, you know, and we talk about the fruit of the Spirit of love and joy and peace and patience, and those are come as a result of our abiding relationship with the Lord. And I think so often ministers or people that are in full-time ministry can slip into this, everything I'm doing is as a, you know, is ministry, as you said. And so I have chosen to say, I have to jealously guard that time. And it's really got to be about my growth and development. So whether it's books that I'm reading and wanting to challenge myself with, you know, we all need models that have gone before us that are pulling us out of what is our typical rut or rhythm that we're in and saying, hey, I want to live transformed. I want to be different. And how is it that I am going to do that? And so, yes, spending time with the Lord is integral in my journey. And then from there, I'm trying to be very cognizant of what are called divine appointments, or just the conversations, the people that are in my path that, hey, if we're going and making disciples, it's not just about the going elsewhere, but it's as you're going. Who am I running into and how am I encouraging them? And I love this verse in Proverbs 11:25. It says, a generous man will prosper. He who refreshes others will himself be refreshed. Mm. And I find that the more I'm giving it away, the more I'm personally receiving, you know, and it's better to give than receive. We know that. So how is it that I am going to be a dispenser of hope and to be a beacon of joy and demonstrate what connection with the Lord looks like? And it's very convicting. I mean, I think about Paul's words, follow me as I follow Christ. And can I really say that? Will people end up being better by modeling after me? And in so doing, you know, I think we all feel like we're failing in some area, but I really want to excel in that one because that's what's really going to matter. You know, eternity is people and God's word. You know, these are the eternal aspects in our life. And so I need to spend time with people and God's word. And in so doing, the rest of the things fall in line. And I've heard this quote, you know, take care of God's stuff and God will take care of your stuff. You know, take care of the things that are important to him, and people are important. So one of my big emphasis, you know, 20 years on at JH Ranch, you know, things can get routine, stale, and I've had to ask myself, okay, so what's my motivation? What's getting me out of bed in the morning? And my big prayer this summer was, Lord, give me your love for people. Because every person has a story, and with that story, they all have needs, they have desires and hopes, and we get to be at a place where they're coming to connect, and we want to set up an environment where it's easier access for them to encounter a living God. And I have to personally be on that journey myself. And if I'm not, you know, you fake it till you make it, you know, those statements, I'm sure, you know, we get there, but there's a scripture that talks about how where people were talking about how Jesus spoke, and they said, gosh, you don't speak like some of the scribes, but one who has authority. And I think, well, authority comes from connection mm-hmm. with the Father and walking in success in that. So am I doing that personally? And that will produce the evident fruit that we all want. Inherently, we want those things, but we need models in our life that are doing it. And so I'm aspiring to be a model. It's pretty easy for me in a lot of ways when you have a lot of college kids and others looking at you to feel that burden. I mean, you grow the best when you have to teach, right? Mm-hmm. Because it causes you to dig in more. And it's that journey that we're on of saying, I've got to be doing it myself. And thankfully, I've just found that over the years, with all that's been going on, that my zeal or desire to spend the time with the Lord hasn't waned in a big way. Mm. It's still fresh and new. And, you know, as we go through seasons, how do we keep it current? Well, I've heard this quote. It says, you know, if you're not hungry, start exercising. You're going to get real hungry. Mm-hmm. If I'm not hungry spiritually, I need to exercise spiritually. I need to share. And if I start sharing, then I'll realize, oh my gosh, I don't really have it to give. So am I going to either make it up, be very principle driven, or no, I want there to be a vitality that's coming off of my life. And, you know, my situation is such that it's cyclical. It comes in every summer that we're building towards this. So there's this natural clock ticking and says, you got to keep digging it. Mm.
Great stuff. I got a couple practical questions, and this is just things I've heard repeatedly. Success leaves clues. And so as I have these interviews, there's things that just keep coming up. Do you journal?
Yes. Not near as consistently as I want.
Okay.
But I found there's a quote on my journal that says, if the God of the universe is speaking, don't you think you ought to write it down? Mm. And that convicts me, but I find that when time gets short, I'll read up to the time to go and then I leave. But it doesn't have the sticking power that it does when I journal. And so it's one of those, yes, I need to do that more. I always find that when I do, I retain it better. And of course, then you can look back as an example and say, gosh, this is where I was. And this is the testimony. And the word testimony means to do again. So you just want to, look back and say, this is how I've been developing as a person. And this is how I saw God show up. Mm-hmm. And we find ourselves in similar circumstances with more responsibility. And we want to point back to those spots and say, okay, I was here. I've grown to this spot. And so, yes, and I need to do it more.
Okay. That's obviously, I mean, it's just a very consistent habit I've seen. I've done it for 20 years, but you'll be happy to know this morning I was in Romans 5 and I was doing rope. Uh-huh. What's been revealed? What's my observation? What's my prayer? What's my example? Yeah. That's taught at JH Ranch for the listeners. Do you have an accountability group?
Yes.
Do you have mentors? Like, what does that look like? Because I know we're not built to live in isolation.
Right.
How do you keep from becoming isolated, especially as the executive director?
Right. So, yes, there's some Outback Men's groups that I've been a part of. And they will start up after the summer. That's been a key point. This cycling group that I'm with, really it has stemmed out of this group at church. And so the conversations center around growth and development a lot of times. And I've had the opportunity to work with a lot of friends as well as coworkers. And that can be a tricky dynamic. But some of my closest friends were coworkers of old that have moved on. And mm-hmm. I will stay connected with them because of their ability to just look straight in and say, how are you? What's really going on? I know your world. And, we give them permission to do that in our lives. And so that's – we have to have accountability. And I would say my regular people have been those that I've worked closely with that have gone on.
Well, I think that's the most impactful way to do it because the ones doing life with you are – they know you the best.
Right.
They're able to speak into, things they see that aren't measuring up or holding you accountable
right.
to what you said you were going to do.
I also say one last thing is that the leadership, our founder, there are some older people at the ranch that I really look to as mentors. I mean, spiritually, they've been guiding me a whole lot. But I'm fortunate enough to say inside of our culture, our work environment, there are people that I would say I want to model that
mm-hmm.
after.
Love it. Well, you and your life and your family's life are impacting others. I mean, I literally think half the guests on my show have espoused the benefits of JH. And so just know that what you guys do matters. I have seen tangible fruit in both of my daughters' lives. I mean, getting up, reading their Bible. I mean, it's just such a joy as a father. And so happy that we've made that commitment and would encourage anyone who has not already looked into this. I mean, they can just go to jhranch.com. Would that be the easiest way? Do that, dads, moms. It is a worthwhile investment. Just like I tell my friends, it's non-negotiable. You've got to take your kids to JH Ranch. At a minimum, find one of these Outback experiences. I had a friend recently do that. He couldn't take off enough time right. off of work to go to California. He did, I think, Tuscaloosa, 45 minutes away. Had a great experience with his son, so that's an option, too. Jonathan, thank you so much for carving out an hour being on the show.
You're welcome, Forrest. It was a joy to be with you.
Great conversation. I've taken a lot from it. I always have the blessing. Mindy listens to these, and she will bring up something like, hey, we're not doing that, or we used to do that, or we've talked about doing that.
Back to accountability. Our lives are really good.
Yeah, that's what they're there for. So there's a lot in this one, especially the no TV and my commitment, Mindy. That's my commitment this quarter.
You heard it here first.
That's right. So anyway, thank you for the time. It's been great.
You're welcome.
Tune in next week. We've got another special guest coming, Tribecast.